Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. You know I'm a big fan of enjoying life while still being smart financially. That's why I love ButcherBox. I can get a variety of high-quality meat, seafood, chicken, and pork at an amazing value, all with exclusive member deals delivered to my door with free shipping always. One thing I just never wanted to cut out of my spending plan is eating good food. And with ButcherBox, I don't have to, and neither do you. Where else can you get free protein for a whole year? Yes, you heard that right. One of my favorite go-to dinners is a salmon bowl. I'm not even a huge salmon lover, but ButcherBox's wild-caught salmon is oh so good. I make a nice little marinade, saute some veggies, cook the salmon, and throw in some Weiss. And it is an amazing dinner. If you want to take less trips to the grocery store and always have prepared meat in the freezer for a lot less money, you need ButcherBox in your life. Sign up at butcherbox.com/ETM and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/ETM. Hey, I'm Shauna Compton-Game. This is Millennial Money, and today we're talking 7 not-so-talked-about money tips.
Millennial Money with Shauna Compton-Game. It will expand your brain.
So I wanted to talk to you today about some money tips that I think aren't talked about enough or maybe at all. And they're things that I think are really important at least to consider. Remember, anytime you're hearing about a money tip or a money idea or a money suggestion, whatever it may be, you always have to pass it through the filter of, does this work for my own personal situation, for my goals, for my family's goals, whatever it may be, right? So everything is kind of with a grain of salt. And as I always like to say, all of these ideas on the podcast that we talked about, and we've had well over 250 episodes in the last 2 years, are food for thought, right? Because money is not one size fits all. I don't tell you the 10 rules to follow, and then if you follow those 10 rules, like magically you're going to be rich or wealthy or be able to achieve everything you want. And I get really frustrated, I think, when I hear a lot of people talk about rules, that you have to follow these exact rules or you're not doing it right. And I'm using air quotes right now. You actually can't see it. I wish you could. But that's just not the case, because even if, let's just say there were these like magical 10 rules or steps or things that you had to do, even if you crossed out all of those 10 things,
it doesn't suddenly mean that you're going to, you know, retire with enough money to last for the rest of your life, that you're never going to have a financial blip come up, or that you're always going to be able to afford every money goal that you want. It doesn't work that way. And I think that we just don't talk about that enough, right? I wish we would literally just take down the pretty bows and all of the magical things, you know, that we, I don't know that we think, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. You get my idea here, right? Like we pretty this up, we pretty money up, we pretty up what you have to do. And then we say, if you don't do these things, you're not doing it right. And that gets so frustrating to me, because there are so many things where there isn't necessarily a right or wrong. There's just a lot of different ways to do it. Now, there are some things where there is a right, I wouldn't even say a wrong, but there's just kind of a methodology for how you should do certain things. That is absolutely the truth, right? But everything is totally dependent on your situation. And so, again, you got to always just weigh it against you, right? Because you know you best, you know what you're trying to do, you know what you're trying to achieve. And I don't. I'm just here to give you a lot of ideas, a lot of things to think about, demystify a lot of things for you, and, you know, hopefully bring some clarity or, you know, some excitement maybe to tackling some of these money things. So talking about some 7 things that, again, I don't think are often talked about. And the first one, I know I've talked about this on a few podcasts before, but I think this is something that is overlooked a lot. And I think it's something that could step in and be kind of a vital piece of someone's overall financial plan. And it's something called an umbrella policy. And it works just exactly like this sounds. This is something that you would add with your current homeowners, car insurance company, whoever you're using. That's who you would actually purchase this umbrella policy for. And, you know, if this is at all intriguing to you, I highly suggest that you call and talk to that person, get more information, get quotes for what it would be for your situation. An umbrella policy usually is not that expensive in the grand scheme of things. We have an umbrella policy. I think we pay maybe a couple $100 a year. So it's not a lot of money for amount of protection that it provides. What you don't think about often when you're pricing car insurance is those different limits that are on the car insurance, right? And let's say you were in potentially like a catastrophic car accident, right? And you were sued. And it's very easy, if you're sued for anything, for you to actually hit the limits of your car insurance, what they're going to provide. Well, the difference, you got to somehow come up with that money. And I know most of us don't have, you know, $500,000 to $1 million just kind of sitting around, right? And so what an umbrella policy does is it literally goes over your car insurance, over your home insurance, over your renter's insurance, all of those sort of thing, like an umbrella would do. And it's going to provide an extra layer of coverage for you. So if you hit those limits, you've got an extra pool of money that you can pull from, right? It's beautiful. I think it is something that is just not talked about a lot because it's not sexy. And we don't think about it. We don't think about it when we're, you know, getting our car insurance or things like that. But it can really be a huge bank account saver, lifesaver, if you will, if something happens and you're in a spot where you're sued. And I have seen so many different scenarios where an umbrella policy literally has come in like Superman with a cape on and saved the day. So I'm going to put a little link to description about umbrella policy in the show notes. Again, if it's something that is sort of intriguing to you, I highly suggest just get a quote from your auto insurance carrier. You know, $500,000, $1 million sounds like a lot of money, right? We have a $1 million policy, and I think we pay, like I said, maybe $200 a year. It's a very small amount of money to leverage that kind of money, just in case again, something happens and it's going to umbrella, it's going to cover that gap where your other insurance leaves off. Hope that makes sense. Again, ask your property and casualty agent for more information on that, and I'm sure they would be happy to talk about that because it's just not talked about very much. All right, number two. This is, I think, something that a lot of people know about, but we tend to get really siloed in our thinking. And it's just the idea that a really smart money move is to have many different buckets of wealth. So often what I find is that a lot of people focus on, you know, saving in their 401k, saving in their IRA, saving their Roth, which is great. That is an amazing place to put your money, right? It's great when the stock market's up, not so great when it's down, but usually that's just kind of a blip and you recover. People who left their money in after 2008, 2009 have more than, if they're invested properly, more than enough made up for that particular loss. But I will say that a lot of the wealthiest people that I have seen, that I have worked with, that I have, you know, had a little glimpse into their finances have buckets of wealth. So they may have some real estate. Maybe they have some investment properties. They have some money in their 401k and their IRA. Maybe they invest in some businesses. Maybe they invest in some other things. They spread their wealth out, right? And they're not kind of this tunnel vision of thinking. What a lot of people forget is if you're invested primarily in a 401k or an IRA. Now, Roth doesn't apply to this, but those other two, when you go to retire, the money that you're going to take out is taxed at that time because you put that money in pre-tax. And a lot of times people forget that. They think, oh, I've got a lot of money in there. But they forget that the taxes actually have to come out of that when you go to pull money out. And that does affect things overall, right? So again, if we've got our money spread out in lots of different things, if there's a market decline, you know, there's a million things that could happen. You have lots of different places that you could go to pull money from. So just again, something food for thought. Number three is something I call a float fund. We talk a lot about emergency funds. Emergency funds, super, super important, but a lot of times people are like, I don't even like that word emergency. And so that does not motivate me to save money in emergency fund. And I get it. I don't like bad words like that either. But a float fund is something very similar to an emergency fund. But if the idea of saving 3 to 6 months worth of your fixed expenses in an account is just way too overwhelming, let's think about some other things that might be a little bit more manageable for you, right? So number one is, what is the deductible on your car insurance? Is it $500? Is it $1,000? Is it more? Whatever that amount is, that should be in your float fund. Save that money in your float fund. In case you have an accident and you need to get that deductible, you've got the cash. You don't even have to think about it, right? And number two, what is your health insurance deductible? If you have one of these health insurance plans that has a really high deductible, try your best to save as much as you can ahead of the new year in that float fund so that you've got that money there when you need to use it for your deductible. If you're just going to the doctor, maybe not such a big deal, right? But if you have to have a procedure or an x-ray or going to the hospital, you're going to hit that deductible super fast. And it can be, you know, a bit of panic. Now, a lot of hospitals, a lot of doctors allow you to work out payment plans, which is awesome. A lot of them do it at zero interest, which is way better than you putting that charging that on a credit card or anything like that. You should always ask for a payment plan because a lot of hospitals, a lot of doctors are willing to do this for you. It's a better way for you to leverage your money than, again, a credit card or pulling it out of your retirement or anything like that.
I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family and you want to do the best for them, but vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress toward your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/etm. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/etm. That's monarchmoney.com/etm for your extended 30-day free trial. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
But if you save enough in your float fund, you got the cash there, right? And another thing, okay, so we got our car deductible money, we got our health insurance deductible money. Let's try and save at least a minimum of 1 month of our income in this float fund too. Now, if you're married, if there's two of you, try to save a month of income for each of you. Again, this is not going to provide you with a whole lot of floating ability if you lose your job or something happens, but you've at least got something in there, and something is always better than nothing, all right? So if the idea of emergency fund kind of freaks you out or you don't know how to approach it, think about a float fund. Okay, number four, oftentimes you're offered company life insurance through work. A lot of times they cover the life insurance. Great, no out-of-pocket to you, perfect scenario. But sometimes you're offered insurance, life insurance through a company that you actually have to pay. And from spending 11 years working in insurance industry, I can tell you that usually the company life insurance is going to cost you more than if you got your own individual life insurance policy, right? It's at least worth you cost comparing. At the very minimum. So I'm going to put a link in the show notes, a couple online places that you can cost compare and just see. For instance, I was just with someone, a friend over the weekend, and we were cost comparing her, buying her company life insurance with outside life insurance. And the difference was drastic for what she would have to pay for the company life insurance versus what she would have to pay just getting a policy on an individual basis. She would be saving so much money getting it on an individual basis. Now she has to qualify, so her health has to be good. There are factors that have to be considered in there. However, the cost difference, it was like enough to fund one of her money goals, all right? So again, just something for you to compare, food for thought. And if you don't know if you're paying for your company life insurance, well, I suggest that's a really good place to start, right? Ask HR, find out what's going on, because you got to know what's taken out of your paycheck and, you know, make sure that those deductions make sense for you. Maybe your money's better allocated a different way. I don't know. I've seen it happen so many times. So I'm always kind of like urged to talk to you about it. All right. Number five, I've talked again about this on a lot of different podcasts. And, you know, there's a million different ways to think about this one. But if you are struggling for a down payment for your first house, one of the ways that you can do it is you have an IRA is, and I'm just talking about IRAs right now, there is a first-time homebuyer exemption. That means you can pull out $10,000 penalty-free, all right, if you've not owned a principal residence in the last 2 years and use this for down payment. Again, there are a lot of details with this. I'm going to put a link in the show notes for you to make sure that you read this and check this out, all right? But the $10,000 is penalty free. So normally if you were under 59 and a half and you pulled money out, you would owe a 10% penalty. Now it's penalty free, but it still adds to your income for the year. So you're going to have to pay income taxes on that money. However, it can sometimes help you get to the point of where you can buy your first home. So if you're married and you each have an IRA, you each can pull $10,000 out. Again, it's going to add to your income, but there isn't a penalty. So suddenly now you've got $20,000. It can make a difference for a lot of people. Is it always prudent to do? Nah, not always, right? Because as we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, everything is not black and white, right? This is not one size fits all. So the negative is that it is going to take away from your retirement portfolio. That is a very real occurrence. Again, so you have to weigh these things out, but I just want to at least be able to talk to you about these things so you know they are available to you. All right, number six. While we're talking about houses, you know, it's a really interesting market out there. It's a really interesting climate. I don't know where you live. I'm in Los Angeles, big city. Houses have rebounded. And a lot of times people just can't afford buying their quote unquote dream home. And I'm not even talking about something extravagant, right? In Los Angeles, you gotta have at least, and I'm not exaggerating here, around $500,000 to buy a small house that's old. This is just sort of the realities here. A lot of cities are booming. There are a lot of places, though, where you're probably listening like $500,000. We could buy a mansion for that where you live, and God bless you, because that is such an awesome luxury to have, right? We don't have it out here in Los Angeles. You don't have it in New York, or certainly in New York City. You know, Nashville, booming, booming market. You're fringing on being able to afford there. So there's just a lot of places where that. San Francisco, forget it. You can't even buy a garage for that amount. But what a lot of people are doing is thinking about this maybe a little bit differently. What if we bought an investment property somewhere? And what if that investment property grew and appreciated? What if we could take cash out of that investment property a couple years down the line? Then we could afford the house that we really want in the area that we really want. So my point is that there are lots of ways to look at this, to approach this problem. So I don't want you to, again, get caught in kind of that tunnel vision that there's only one way to do this. There's lots of different ways to do this. There's lots of ways to invest in investment property that's not in your area, right? Again, got to make a smart decision. You got to work with good people. You got to know what you're putting your money into. But sometimes it does work out really well in your favor. So just something to think about. All right, number seven. This is kind of an interesting one. Doesn't apply for a lot of people, but I'm finding more and more, especially listeners to this podcast, are doing entrepreneurial things. For instance, having online businesses, whether it's a blog, whether you're creating courses, whether you're coaching, whatever it may be, this is definitely a millennial trend, right? The online business kind of surgence that's happening. And I find that a lot of people who have online businesses are posting income reports, right? How much money you made last month, last year, whatever it may be. Now, normally that's good, right? Because people want to know that you're doing well, because then they want to buy whatever you're selling, or they want to jump on the bandwagon. It makes sense. It's just human psychology, right? Why would we want to buy something from someone who's not doing well? It wouldn't make sense. But I'm always telling online business owners that are producing these income reports to be a little bit cautious. You know, we live in a very Sue happy world, especially if you're in a big city. I mean, it's like at any chance someone can get to sue you. And so it just is, I think, making it really easy that, let's say you get in an accident, let's say something happens and somebody decides to sue you, and they can go right online. They can tell exactly how much money you made last month or last year or this year or whatever it may be because of these income reports, right? They live online. People can search these things, and it just puts you in risk of exposure, right? And so I'm just always telling people, just be a little on guard of the stuff that you're sharing on social media. This goes for anyone. Stuff you're sharing on social media, the stuff you're showing on Facebook, that anybody can have access to that type of content, it could put you at an added risk exposure that you just don't need. So maybe think about that next time, you know, you're thinking about Instagramming out, I don't know, some amazing thing that you just bought. Not that you shouldn't do it. That's not at all what I'm saying. But if your accounts are public and anybody can see them, I don't know, maybe just think about that. So there are seven things, not so talked about money tips, money ideas, money things to think about. And hopefully these, again, are just a little food for thought for you. Be sure to check the show notes. I'll have links to a lot of these things that we talked about. As always, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Shauna Game. And hey, if you love this podcast, do me a favor. Please, please, please share it with your friends. Share it with everybody. Keep this podcast growing. I appreciate you so much. And I'm so excited that you're a listener.